Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. How are my loyal listeners? Thank you for your continued support. As always, smash that subscribe button, everybody. We have an amazing show for you all because boarding the mothership is Summer Moore. She's the creator and star of the comedy podcast Pandemic Pillow Talk, available on YouTube. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars.
Hello, Miss Moore. Thank you so much for coming to the First of the Stars podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. Hello.
It's totally my pleasure. I've really enjoyed watching Pandemic Pillow Talk. I got to watch the episode. That was a lot of fun.
Wait, do you have to? Which one? Do you know which one you watched? Or
No. I watched more than one. I watched, I believe, four or five of them.
Okay, sweet. Well, thank you. I'm glad you liked them. I was just curious.
I was like, I enjoyed the first one. Enjoyed the first episode a lot with the mother interrupting, and then I definitely watched, tuned in for the Eric Roberts ones as well, and, some of the others.
we just had our finale come out last night, so it was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's fantastic. And I think, and the way I like a lot about the episodes, too, they're like perfect bite-sized episodes, they're about 5 to 7 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So how did you land on that time frame?
It's interesting because you hear like from older crowds, they've been like, they're not long enough. You need to make these longer. And then the younger people are like, okay, can you just like cut out the intro and just go straight to the date? And I'm like, okay, that would not be a show. We'd just be watching like a TikTok video. Like you need to develop a character and you'd ever see is Mackenzie going on a hellish date, like for the most part. So great. Most all the scripts I wrote were, except for the finale, that's a supersized one, that's 15 minutes, but all the other ones, it was always a plan to make them short because we shot them during lockdown and actors had to shoot it themselves. And it was a whole process from that standpoint. But most of the scripts I wrote were, I think, roughly 8 or so pages, 10 pages, something like that. And with comedy, it's always cutting it is a lot shorter. So it was never a plan for us to have like 30-minute. I mean, there's no way we would have been able to pull that off anyway. So, yeah.
Well, the nice thing about, once again, the length is that it avoids filler. Like anyone who's watched a sitcom, there's tons of filler that you have to, because you just got to fill the 22 minutes. You cut out the filler, you kind of get to the point and you get to the humor immediately. Yep.
Yeah, it's been interesting for distribution though, because a lot of platforms want it longer. Like we even had our sales agent say, can you make them a little bit longer, at least 10 minutes? And I was like, no, like, and they're locked. Most of them are locked off shots. So you're not wanting to like be on a webinar for 10 minutes. Like it's not a webinar because the characters are so engaging, but there was only so much you can do with, we're in one position for this amount of time. So right. Who's going to want to watch that for 10 minutes?
I think, as we're, as I read a little bit about how it was even shot, I mean, you shot it it's in location. It's during COVID. We'll get to it in a moment, which is a big deal. But you shot it on an iPhone, which I don't know how if they're not advertising with you, it should be Pandemic Pillow Talk brought to you by iPhone. But so you shot it all on an iPhone. How difficult was it? I mean, I have an iPhone. They're nice. They're not perfect for like, they're not like film cameras. So how did you make it look that good on an iPhone? And teach us.
Yeah. It was a real trial and error. Originally, I wrote it for us to be able to use our webcams and film that way. Yep. And we were just going to do it via Zoom. And as we started to like go through technology, realizing that Zoom doesn't record even at it's at 720 for people who know, that kind of stuff. Might get a little too technical for others, but it's at a lower resolution than you were. And now everybody's shooting in like 6K or whatever. And we're in 720 plus there's a lag. If you've noticed like on Zoom, there's a lag and then it skips frames. And so we learned pretty early on, we can't do it this way. Although we did still do the acting, like for me to act with my partners and the directors, we would be on Zoom. So we'd have a webcam for one. Then we'd have our camera that's filming us, which is the iPhone. Mm-hmm. I had a side camera. So I had two iPhones. And then we had a tablet that controlled various things. And then I had another phone that was recording my audio. I had the most of everybody, but most everybody just had the one less camera, but we all had like two or three different gadget, at least three gadgets. And I will say I am an Android person. So I had an Android for my audio. So Everybody else, I think everybody else's iPhone, I mean, the video and all that was iPhone, but we wanted really good quality. And since everybody is shooting from their houses with minimal lights, we don't have like full on film set lights. I mean, we had some, but it wasn't like we're investing in a whole grip truck to go drop off all these lights and set it up for the actors. It had to be what actors could do themselves. And so then the big challenge, though, because then we talked about filming front facing so that you have the front of your camera of your phone and so I could at least see what my shot was. And then you realized because all the phones' back cameras are better than the front and the fronts are not near as good quality, we had to flip the camera around. So then you couldn't see yourself. So then we had to come up with like, how are we going to get this shot so that you can. It was a lot. I mean, it just kept being like, we've got to try. And then I would have to have like remotes for my cameras. And at some points the remotes weren't working. So then I'd have to get up, go turn the camera on, go back around, go, you know, it was a lot.
You're like an entire tutorial on how to properly shoot with an iPhone. And I agree 100% about Zoom. Obviously that's what we're shooting on right now. And I will tell you right now, like I said, you do see the stream effect. And the other issue with editing, when it doesn't sync properly, which is a nightmare. I imagine like when you're editing off an iPhone, I mean, there's no editing equipment in an iPhone for that kind of thing. So did you send it, you got to send it to a different program, that kind of thing?
Well, we didn't edit it through the iPhone. We just shot it through there, but we were using a program called Filmic Pro, which is eventually what we got to that, which would allow the director, producer, whoever needed to see it, DP, everybody, the crew that was remote, to be able to see the actual shot of the iPhone. The initial one we tried to shoot, we didn't have that program. And then we were like, I was basically having to like upload my footage so that the director could then see the shot. And it just turned into like this mess because you'd always have your webcam and then you'd have like the iPhone above it. So the shot above it would not match the webcam, and webcams are not always wide angle, and you've got all this. But with Filmic Pro, you could control like all the settings. I mean, you could change too much for, you know, and you just do it. That's why you had to have the tablet, so you could control various things on the iPhone. So, and the iPhone was wonderful quality from that standpoint of, but we'd have to like pause and do uploads for things like if sound, we are too many files or something like that. And various things like that.
Well, like I mean, for people, once again, the show Pandemic Pillow Talk on YouTube, it's a wonderfully done show. And not only was it, you know, it's well acted, but one thing that one said I noticed watching it, you are basically filming in one location, you know, you're seated, you're still, that you have a limitation in what you can do. Does that increase or affect the creativity of the ideas you were going with in the show? And I mean, does it even... So I mean, I kind of think about almost like the Jaws and the Shark and Jaws, you know, because it didn't work, they had to come be creative in how they filmed it and actually made it more interesting. You have a similar thing in this where, because you're limited in location, you had to become more creative with how you went about doing it.
Exactly. I mean, there's a couple of the actors that do move around, and it was a lot of work to get them to move because they don't have a crew to do the lighting or the camera and their mic. And now they're having to do that. Plus carry a camera, do shot. I mean, there's one part where I had to like pan up to show my wall. And that took like a little, like, I still have to pan and look natural and like, you know, like it's fluid. And so any kind of movement was like, oh geez. Cause you're, and it takes you out of your character, which I've done found footage before where I had to carry a camera. And, but that was not to the extent of this, because you're just either having people shoot cameras at you. Usually we weren't doing like selfies. So then I'd be filming and acting behind, and the other actors would do the same and stuff like that. So, I feel from the writing perspective, absolutely. It was a real challenge, number one, to try to come up with concepts that people could shoot in their house that were going to be engaging, that weren't going to require a lot of like, now we have to get, you know, an amusement park in their apartment or whatever the heck. So I had to be very creative on how can I make, number one, these characters so engaging that you want to sit there and watch them in a locked off shot, which is why a lot of the guys are so outlandish, is so that you want to watch instead of a webinar, like, a, you know, you're just sitting there like, oh my gosh, we're just watching the dry. So that was one thing that I had to come up with. And yes, it was more about trying to come up with creativity of what could I write in the scripts. And then we built on it as a team of things that were various ideas of things that I maybe envisioned that I thought was going to work. And then we try it, or we talk about it and go, hey, we got to try to come up with another solution. So it required a lot more creativity. And then also you didn't know what once you got the actors cast, now you had to see their setup and what they were able to do. So then you had to mold it around them and what they could bring to the table.
I mean, that's a lot. When you're casting these individuals, these actors, you're saying you got to say, not only can you do the part, but can you also direct, edit, film, and do all this on your own? I mean, and because you can't, they're not with you when you're trying to direct them or direct or kind of angle what they want them to do. You're not there to do it. So how much trust did you have to have in these actors? How difficult was it to find an actor that basically can film their own movie on this story?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, you can put in the casting notice, you have to be really technologically savvy. But as actors are told, in the beginning, I was told, what if any casting director asks you if you can do something, you always say yes, even if you can't, and you'll figure it out, right? So every actor, I think, not every, but we'll say in general, thinks they can do anything and say they can do anything. And they aren't like really, okay, you can't, you're not really good with tech. This is not your strong suit. Like, so you do run into those things. I mean, those are just human beings who just say they can do stuff. And then guess what? I mean, people who think they're good drivers, and then you're like, what is happening with your drive? It's horrible. I have a friend that she cannot talk while she drives, because then she's just putting on the brakes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, she has no idea. So it does make it a lot more challenging, as well as some of those, some of them I wrote with more than one actor in the same household, which made it even harder, because now not only did we have to have one actor nail it, now we had to have multiple, and they had to be in a pod quarantining together. So it made it a lot, but I really wanted to work women into it. I mean, my character Mackenzie is heterosexual and she dates dudes. And so it was like, how do I get women into here too, so that it's not just a dude fest? And and a lot of them needed to be households. And so, yeah, it was hard.
So how often did you, I mean, or did it come out where you had an actor, you felt it was perfect for the role, and you start seeing the film footage of how they're actually shooting, you're going, shit, we're going to recast this thing. The guy apparently doesn't know how to do a damn thing.
That's hysterical. Luckily we didn't, I mean, first off, I wasn't seeing that because I'm acting at that point. So luckily I do know when I'm acting with people, like, can they improv or can't they? You know, actors will say everybody can do comedy and not everybody can do a comedy. Like, you know, it's the nature of the beast. And so I do find that out from the acting side of like, okay, they're not going to be so great at A, B, or C, you know, and I'm not great at everything either. So, you know, but you can, I can say just in general, editors can make or break a project. Yes, if there's horrible acting and everybody's horrible, an editor can't do anything with that. The lighting's horrible, you know, there's various things, but let's pretend you get pretty decent performances, and at least, or some people are good in it or something like that. I really feel like if you have a strong editor, they just can, like our main editor on here, she just works magic into things that I'm like, that was brilliant. And I feel like she honestly makes it look way better than I haven't watched all the footage, but I'm just like, wow, this is phenomenal. But at the end of the day, the performances had to be there for her to pull on. She, especially with comedy, you can't fake timing. And if somebody didn't do something funny, then you can't go, oh, let's pretend this is funny. So
the laugh track, put the laugh track in your pillow talk video. I do wonder sometimes when you watch a movie or whatever, when you see it, unusual amount of editing and cuts, if that was an indication of the actor failing at some point, where they're like, okay, cut the shot. The guy is supposed to be crying. Make it, move it around to the next person, point of view.
That's so funny. I don't know that that's, I mean, sometimes there are quick cuts just because they want to get various things. Maybe there may be that, but I do know the movie Memento, I have been told, was a horror, was like, they thought it was a bomb. It was horrible. And then the editor decided to do the non-linear editing. And you know that, I don't know if you remember that movie.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Just awesome.
Yes.
The editor saved that project.
I mean, Christopher Nolan, once again, one of you can't argue with many things done by Christopher Nolan, but I didn't know that about the editor. That's actually fascinating. So Christopher Nolan probably took all the credit, but the editor's like, motherfucker, I did it myself. It was my movie.
This is what I've heard. Of course, I wasn't involved with it, but that's what I've heard, is that it was from people on, you know, in the industry that have said that that editor saved the project. Because
anyone watching in the comments section, please let us know if this is accurate or not. Which is fine either way. I don't even care. It's a fun story.
If they're really accurate, not opinions.
That's true as well. So 40 different people say different things and they can't all be accurate. Reminder to people in the comment section.
Right. There you go. Yeah.
So once again, Pandemic Pillow Talk was shot during COVID, shot and conceived during the COVID pandemic, which was obviously fun for all of us. So the question I had is, when did Pandemic Pillow Talk, did that come from inspiration or desperation from the experience of being locked down for a certain level of time?
It is based on a short film I did, a spinoff from a short film I did called As in Kevin, which had my same character, Mackenzie, and she goes on online dating. And that did a festival circuit. And then during the lockdown, we were all trying to come up with projects that we could shoot while we were shut down and safely, and not go out and do guerrilla and, you know, chance getting sick and things like that. And one of my associates that's involved in this project, she said, well, why don't you do something about dating during the pandemic? And I was like, "Woo, that's a great idea. I don't know why I didn't think about that, but I guess I'd already thought, I've done online dating. Why am I going to do it again? But then I was like, well, let's do a spinoff from As in Kevin and take this character, Mackenzie, and put her in the world of online dating. And so we all wanted to be creative. We all wanted to be doing something. And it really like lended itself to allow us to do this. I mean, we got talent across the country, actors that we would not necessarily had a budget to fly out, put up and do things with. But on the flip side, we had to deal with a lot of tech. You know, there was a lot of things that we had to like figure out how we're going to do it, because it hadn't been done. And I've heard like a lot of the big studios were doing various like Netflix and things, but they say they were 100% remote, but they had a van outside with their crew that could help with things. And ours were drop off the gear, bye, good luck, you know, we'll see you later kind of attitude. And I mean, it's just to be safe, because we didn't have a vaccine. So everybody, we wanted, all the gear had to be sanitized. So we'd have PAs wiping all the gear and had to research what kind of stuff really sanitizes and what you can use on electronics and like, you know.
Right. And I mean, I remember a long time. Luckily, by that point, I was already married, so I didn't worry about online dating at all. But once again, I just remember being locked, you know, for months. So the comedy that came up to as the writer, you know, where did that come from? Was it just, did you go star crazy to the point of humor where you just started being far funnier than you would have been otherwise?
I don't really do online dating anymore. I've had enough challenges. As in Kevin had some of my real dates on it. And I did have a little twinges of that in Pandemic Pillow Talk, but for the most part, the guys in it, I took characteristics of guys I've dated and then made a character out of them. So that's some true stuff. And the mom is based on a lot of the stuff my mom's done. So there are some like real things, but as far as the dates and the dudes, like I haven't dated, you know, a French dude and like that kind of stuff, but I just came up with these like outlandish kind of scenarios. I did research what people were doing for online dating during the pandemic. So I was trying to like write on Reddit, like, do anybody have any stories? I'm trying to get people to like give me stuff so that I didn't have to like create the whole thing. But another thing was all the Zoom snafus that we were having and still continue to have. Like Eric Roberts is in it and his background like kind of fades in and out, you know, like this, where my arm's gone. And
right.
And we wanted to have that. So the mute button where people are on mute and they continue to keep having a conversation and you're like, I still can't hear you. Why are you still talking? Like, right. This is the universal sign. No, no. And they keep going. Like, so I worked a lot of that into it. And I felt like that was very important for us to have the Zoom snafus and the relatable things. And even though I wasn't doing online dating per se, I have had plenty of people watch and say, this is the reason I don't do online dating anymore. Like, this is all true. This is like what I've gone through. So, you know,
I mean, was it scary knowing that much of your audience knew these guys in some real way? They're like, that these weren't as fictional as you probably thought they were.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, I think I'm just being so outlandish with these people and the characters. And people are like, I dated that guy. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, he was supposed to be fake. I'm sorry.
Because it's funny, because like I said, a lot of those people, like I said, it seems like a common thread is starting off normal, where there's like, okay, this is a normal dude. And then as you're watching, you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
And everything kind of falls apart for him. And as you talk a little bit further, I feel like that's probably also natural that we all do start off normal, or we put on the normal face and then it slips as the talking continues.
Yeah, it's because once you like get to know the person, you're like, but they were so great in the beginning. I don't know what happened. So it is that, but also we had to make very certain that not everybody was so crazy and off the reservation that you're just like every single date, you know, she's just going to be in a hell. You know, there are some that are, they're still super funny, but you're not like, he's such a bad word that you want to like they're all bad. You know, there's some light at the end of the tunnel, or else it would just be this depressing of, okay, who the heck is she gonna date this time? I mean, you have an idea, it's a comedy, you know, it's not gonna go really well on all these dates, or why is she still dating?
I mean,
she would be with one dude now, but you know, so you know stuff's happening, but yeah.
So the question is, how much of, for, I mean, obviously in the real world, we're focused on how much of it is the guy that she is there, she's unlucky with the guy she's finding, Mackenzie, and how much is it potentially Mackenzie also? Or I mean, at some point, the mother as well. I mean, the mother does destroy one potential in the beginning, but so I'm just curious.
There's more than that if you watch the series. Other people mess things up. No, I feel it's never me. I will just say that first and foremost.
Okay.
But I will say, I mean, we all have she's very like buttoned up. She's like, I'm looking at spreadsheets. She's run a whole entire spreadsheet and figured out the equations for how many men in the United States fit her criteria. And so she's probably, OCD-ish, whatever that term is. So sure, she's got her issues too, but they're not to an extent and she's been damaged, her exes have messed her up a little bit, but she's the relatable character. She's the grounded person that's like level-headed and like, I'm just trying to find a good guy. Because if Mackenzie is outlandish and all the dates are outlandish, then you're like, well, no wonder it's not working, because she's crazy.
You
don't want Mackenzie crazy. You want her to be like, sure, she's got a little she needs to work on.
Yes.
But she's going to be the person that she's looking for love, and she's just screwed with online dating.
Well, but as you say, I mean, Mackenzie states that there are 2,200 men in the U.S. that fit her qualifications. Now, once again, as not knowing those numbers, are those numbers too high or too low? I was like, on the one hand, they do seem they could be a little high. There's a lot of potential options. She's not that picky on some level, but I'm thinking to myself, maybe it would be higher considering how many people there are in the country.
So I really did a spreadsheet on this. Like, I was Googling, how do you figure this thing out? And is there an equation? And some dude came up with this whole equation that was way past my math skills of like how he could find the one for him.
But
a lot of the stuff that I was looking for were like lessened. Like initially I said, the guy needs to make over 100K. And the team was like, oh no. You know, that's not, you gotta like,
I was like, Jesus, that eliminates almost 90% of us.
but she's in like advertising, marketing and all that. Like, and she's like making some money. So and she wants to be like, I want a guy who can take care of me. She's not looking for the guy that lives on the couch with his mom. you know, that kind of thing. So that's initially, okay. They talked me down from that. So we said 70K. Okay. And she's in Los Angeles. So, you know, there's a cost of living there.
Oh, that's good. Good point. Good point.
Yeah. But she also has some, like, she's spiritual, that lowers thing, you know, there's various things that probably, and I think the 2200 is actually pretty picky. So like most people on average would be a lot more generic. Like, all right, I know some friends that are like, I don't care what race he is, I'll take a guy from 20 to 50. Like, I just want a dude who's nice. Okay, that kind of thing. And then Mackenzie's not like that. Mackenzie's like, I have my little specific area. So I think hers is actually lower, but I couldn't figure out his whole thing. I ended up having to fudge some of that stuff. And I was like, all right, this is like good enough. And like, this is, I didn't do calculus plus 10, whatever the heck that is, for a reason.
I think Mackenzie does point out that could populate an entire town worth of potential people.
Yeah,
I guess you can move to and move into the town of potential people.
Right. But you got to think 2,200 in the entire US is nothing. So you're trying to find that one and he happens to be on online dating and he happens to have the same like you. I mean, that's all you got in the world basically to pick from. Good luck.
Well, I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that. But like the 2200, I thought to myself, right. I was like, I can't tell if that's picky or not picky, but it's, like, so it's still an impressive number. I don't know why that part caught me. Like, so I was watching that scene, I was like, I froze the video for a few minutes. I tried like debating it in my head. I was like, is that high or low? Like, what does that say about Mackenzie or the potential men in the country? That's the best number that we can come up with.
Because men are like, if I could have 2,200 women, yes.
Our number would be much higher than that, just to let you know. Be like, there are 100 million potential mates out there that we can choose from.
Totally, exactly. As long as she walks, she's upright. Right. Like, okay, we're good. She's of age. Great. Right. We're good.
Yeah, it's a short, the list would really only have like one or two check marks to list on. Like, right, that's right. Good. We're TV. Good. Keep running.
That's totally it. Yeah.
So also on you have some great actors on the show as well. Eric and Eliza Robert is doing it. Now, once again, everyone knows Eric Roberts. How did he get involved in the show? What was it like to have Eric Roberts as your father?
Yeah, it was very cool. It's been interesting. There's another thing because we started it off this way. The younger crowd don't know him. So then I'll say, it's Emma Roberts' dad. And they're like, oh, pretty much everybody knows Julia Roberts. So at least I can say it's his sister, but the Emma Roberts gets the young people. And then people that are probably like 30 and up can go Eric Roberts, Dark Knight, what's Expendables, things. Right. Oh, okay. Okay. How do we get him? Well, I honestly think that it's timing, and because we were doing this project, as he has said, he calls us pioneers of this kind of shooting, especially for indie. I don't know that a lot of projects were being able to film at all. And so he thought that this was really awesome what we were doing, and that they were going to be able to shoot at their house. And as he said on an interview with me, that he said, this is, and it looked great, and they pulled it off. And he just kept remarking how amazing this was that we were doing this kind of thing. So they submitted, like, we got their submissions, and we didn't think there was any way we were going to get them. It was like, come on, this is like too high level. I mean,
right.
He's like crazy, but long story short, they did it. They love the project. They're big supporters behind it. They've said this is one of their favorite projects, and they've just been so wonderful to us. And working with him as my father, it was surreal. I mean, for any of my little indie projects, I haven't had any like names in them ever. It's, I mean, they're always very small indie, and this is not just my project, but right. You know, for Pandemic Pillow Talk. But I'm saying from mine, I've never had a star in them. And then to be working with him, and it was crazy, you know, and Eliza was just so awesome. And she was so like supportive, and she played the role. I mean, their auditions were like outstanding. I don't usually see him do comedy. So when we saw the comedy, it was like, oh my gosh, this is hysterical. And it was very cool to get him to be hysterical, because he's always playing the like mean mob boss heavy dude, you know, like whatever. And he's funny. And she was great. She just took the role and went with it. And my mom has watched it. My mom's been like, yeah, she did a lot of that really well. I mean, my mom likes to like, well, you know, my accent's not that heavy. And I'm like, Mom, your accents, you have a Southern accent. No, do I don't think I still have. Yes, you do. Like, it's just pretty funny. So she, my mom thought it was very good. Eliza did, but not everything's my mom. I've told my mom, this is not a biography. We're not doing a documentary on you. Like, cause she does get critical. Like I wouldn't wear that or some, you know, whatever it is. And I'm like, Mom, it's not you. Her name's Bertha. That's not your name.
but I will say this though, as having watched the show and having you on it and with everyone I watched, you know, Eliza and Eric when they're in it, I must admit, I forget these are not the real people. They're not a real family. So is there ever concern that people would be like, wow, your father's Eric Roberts. That's pretty cool, huh? You know, your mother, Eliza Roberts, she must be really difficult. I'd be like, no, not my family.
Yeah, I still haven't met Eliza in person. We've talked a lot and I've met Eric in person. But, and it's weird. I feel like it's this weird thing anyway. Like you've been watching a show that's like your show. Like I'm on what's The Last Kingdom right now. And I just feel like, yeah, they're my people. And if I ran into the lead actor, I'd be like, hey dude, like, you know, and you get in this world of like, yeah, it's not like that. So like when I saw Eric, I was like, it's Dad. Hi. And he was just like, hello, you know, like the way Dad would be.
Did he at least recognize you? Like, wait, who the hell are you?
There wasn't, but I'm saying we didn't run up and hug each other. Gotcha. Or there wasn't, it was this like, we're clearly not mother or sorry, daughter and dad. So it was very funny. So, I mean, he's lovely there. She's lovely. I love her to death. Like she's just a sweet, kind, generous person. And because they're married, he's sweet, kind and generous. You've got to have that. You've got to have some of that in you. So,
I mean, because he is Eric Roberts and obviously he has his star power. When you're doing Pandemic Billet Talk, was it difficult to kind of correct him or coach him or be like, hey, let's do something a little bit different here? Or you were like, everything was like, that's great, Eric Roberts. Everything's fantastic. Thank you so much for doing this for us. No, that's wonderful. I see that blur, but no, that's perfect.
I know what you're saying. Of like, I'm one of those people that would be like, I don't want to you know, I'm like pussyfooting around. The director that we had that directed him, it was very funny. When she's a very good friend of mine. And when I told her we got Eric Roberts, she's like, who? And it's not Eric Roberts that she doesn't know. I said, literally, it's to the extent that if Jesus walked up to her on the street, she wouldn't even recognize who he is. And she's like, that's true. It is true. She doesn't know who anybody is. So I think and she directs, so that's great. We have to tell her, this is a big dude, man. Like, and then she goes, oh, it's like my mom. My mom didn't realize Chris Evans was a big dude. And so she was like trying to pitch him for me to date. And now she realizes it.
Right.
So, okay. So this is, go back to the director. She didn't realize. And I think that actually helps her, or she doesn't get starstruck and she just treats him like any old actor. But I mean, he does amazing stuff. So, but there is some direction, you know, and he's very open to it. He's like, did you like that? And she'd often ask like, how'd you feel about it? And he's like, if you're happy, I'm happy. That was his response. So he just wants to make people happy and give them what they want. And so you didn't feel like he was going to be like, excuse me, what you're critiquing my performance? Like,
as you're filming Pandemic Pillow Talk, and once again, you're doing it during COVID, how was it the best way to kind of like release it? You're releasing it in April of 2022. Like what kind of created that length, that change in time, like that long after the COVID pandemic?
So we shot it in like November and December of 2020. And because it is, we're not Sony making this, you're enlisting people to help you and do favors for you and work. The way it usually works in the industry is that it's a passion project and you're asking people to work on that. But when they get high paying jobs or things that, you know, obviously they need to take it because that allows them to do that.
Right.
That's really what was going on, is dealing with everybody's schedules of a passion project and how do we get it together. And then we had talked about like, when was the right time. And we thought, oh, we can't release it after we're all in lockdown. We've got to get this done like right away. And then it's kind of like turned into this beautiful thing that a lot of people are like, this is really cool, because I'm kind of like thinking back on the pandemic, even though it wasn't that long ago, like, I remember when we had to do this kind of stuff. And I'm like telling a dude how to wear a mask and various things like that. But you can, it's not so far that we're like in 2050 and like, remember back when I was a young chap, like, it's not like that. So I don't know. It's kind of been nice from that standpoint. And we're still in the pandemic, so it's not completely
that's true. At my current job, we've just been ordered to wear masks again. Mandated. I'm a high school teacher, so we just got mandated to put masks back on. I was like, I thought it was done. It was like this weird retro thing we're now doing from 2 years ago.
It's like a TBT thing, like, right. Masks again. This is so fun. Yeah, so and we didn't, I don't, although Pandemic Pillow Talk, every single episode is titled something with the pandemic and it revolves around the pandemic, it wasn't supposed to be so in your face pandemic that we're like, you know, now I won't touch anything, sanitizer, 6 feet, like, we're not mask on the whole time. We're not doing that. We're just having glimpses of the pandemic and the real reason to be able to do that online Zoom dating is because of the pandemic. So if we didn't have that, then yes, people do it from afar. I'm in Uruguay and you're in New York, then we're gonna do a meeting like that. But I think prior to that, we were doing a lot. Skype was still the thing. I mean, we did Google Hangouts some, but Zoom wasn't like a, you know, some businesses used it, but it didn't become like a normal, everybody, like my parents and everybody have done Zoom now, you know?
I discovered Zoom during the pandemic. I mean, yeah. I was on a different podcast, but that podcast started off with Skype. And then that, it was like that painful transition over to Zoom. Like, what the hell is Zoom? This doesn't make any sense. I don't understand this. Yep. And now I can't imagine not functioning with Zoom. Right. Which is a great advertising as well for Zoom.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, if we could get Zoom to back us because we shot on Zoom and all that kind of stuff. Like, but it's relatable because we have the whole interface and we did change stuff so that it says different stuff like powwow for like, do you want to talk or things like that. So we changed the icons and change the name of it because we're obviously not promoting Zoom from that extent, but it's only relatable from that because pretty much everybody's done it now. So even if you don't online date, you've had a Zoom meeting,
right?
Or you've done a webinar, or you've done, you know, my parents were meeting via movie group with their reviewing movies, all that. So that's relatable, you know?
I mean, not that you had with pandemic Pillow Talk, all this, you basically directed yourself, you did film yourself. Are you now considering branching out to doing another a film or something else on your own that maybe is not Zoom, but like actual film?
Oh, well, I didn't direct myself. We had 5 different female directors. And so they were all.
Oh, I meant because you had to like, work the camera on your own. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, DP. Yeah. And we did have a cinematographer that was on Zoom that would guide you of like, try this and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, no, I feel like, we want Pandemic Pillow Talk to spin off. We would like to do a limited series half hour that's picked up by a streamer studio so that we could do something like Fleabag or whatnot, where Mackenzie gets to go on dates in the real world and work other characters in. I see like other her having girlfriends that go off and like, you know, like Sex in the City kind of thing, if you will. So, but I don't, you're asking if I want to go do some more self filming and with all these tools? No. I mean, no, I somebody else asked like the other producer on that. And she was like, I don't think we'll ever use these. It's great that we have the skills. And he's like, oh, that's really sad. And it's like, I mean, it's cool, but you are very limited on what am I going to do another season of Mackenzie sitting in front of a computer? Sure. I can come up with more characters, but I think eventually it's kind of like tedious, right? I think we want to see them moving around. And it's so hard from an acting perspective that I can speak on of having to do all the crew roles and then hop, and you don't have a stand-in that's sitting there for your lighting or your camera. So you're having to like run around, do the camera, come back, see what the shot is, go back, change this, go da da da, you know, like it's a thing. So it's so nice to be able to just act. And to get into that role when you're playing crew the entire time, oh, Summer, your lights changed in your apartment and you got to go. So now you're back on crew again, right, right. You know? So I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that I have this and that I could teach people about this, and it is a very cool thing.
Right. Right.
But it's exhausting, I think, for actors to have to be doing all that.
I mean, as someone who's watched Pandemic Pillow Talk and enjoyed it so much, the fact that you're going to spin it off, part of me thinking that's awesome. But I'm thinking to myself, poor Mackenzie, she's never find anyone now because she's too successful to find anybody. She's not going to be single forever. As long as this is popular, she is single forever.
I don't know if you watch Sex and the City, but Carrie, Sarah Jessica Parker, would find a dude while her friends, everybody is still dating, but you're still dating the one dude. You still got problems. Like,
right, true.
Now we find out, guess what? He has a kid across town that no one knew about.
Right.
He's married, or, you know, you can still find out stuff. But that's why I'd like to have more women and more actors that she has friends that, so it's not just a whole Mackenzie show of just watching only her date, because you're right. She would never be able to find anybody. And if you watch this season, you may see some surprises in here, but there is a whole segue on Chris Evans. That's like, you know, we would love Mackenzie to date Chris Evans. So if Chris Evans came on our show, I'm going to like keep him on the show.
So if he happens to be watching this show.
Right, right. So no, I'm just playing. But yeah, you're right. You wouldn't want Mackenzie to be, I mean, that's part of it, is you don't, like I was saying, you don't want to make all the dates just dismal and all she ever does is get screwed by all the dates. So there's got to be some glimmers of hope. And if you watch the series, you may see some.
Right, right.
Right.
So what is next from you?
I have a single location horror thriller film that I wrote that I would really love to make. And that's been just a matter of timing, but there are other projects and that are already in the works for not just my projects, like for somebody else in a project. I'm going to be acting in a feature this summer. So, you know, I would like to be doing other people's projects too. I don't like to only do my own. It's just out of kind of necessity or getting to be creative. And I do enjoy writing, but I do also love it when I can just act on a show or film.
Well, Ms. Mars, it's a pleasure talking with you. And for our listeners, Pandemic Bill Talk is on YouTube. The YouTube channel name, is it just Pandemic Pillow Talk?
No, just go to our website, pandemicpillowtalk.com, and then you can watch all the episodes there. I mean, you can go to YouTube and like Google, you know, put in Pandemic Pillow Talk and it'll come up, but it's easier if you just go to the website because you can see all the stuff on there.
All right, very cool. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.